you question him on that.
Well, it says here, if I do a 12-month job, in 12 months, presumably that isn't magic. If I do it in 12 seconds, it might qualify. Scientific inventions have often been said to be magical, and the idea has been put forward that science is magic to people who are not scientific. Now, in our definition of the word magic, science cannot qualify at all. Science is an empirical process. It is simply the ordering of sense data, which we derive by examining the physical world, and we find out how the physical world is related in such a manner that we can produce physical results by physical means. Now, this is not magic and can never become so. The idea underlying magic is the idea of acting immediately with the will onto the world. Now, let's remind ourselves of the primary significance again. This M is the glyph of substance, and the substance of the universe is primary appetite. We have to realize this, that in order for a being to come to be at all, it must first want to be. This wanting to be is symbolized by this inverted W, which is an M. In fact, the W form here, which is two V's, and the M, which is two N's, are mirror images of each other. The W means will, and the M is the substance of the will. The sound R is energy, so Ma is substantial energy. And when substantial energy is operating, you have the ground of mathematics, measurement, and the root of man. When we put the hard letter gamma into it, that means the bringing of this energy into a concrete state. And it is done by driving into the center the energy of the will. This happens inside your own organism continuously. Whenever you concentrate on anything at all with your will, you start precipitating chemistry in the body. Things like gallstones and so on are just obvious examples of this precipitation in the body by the compression of the will of material objects. So that hard gamma there, the G, represents the gross material world brought into being by activity of concentrated will. The I and K at the end symbolize the formal application and control of that process. So if we talk about Marg on its own, we're talking about the driving in to a center and the compacting of the will energy onto that center. The process, if under efficient control, precise control, the vowel E means precision, punctiliousness, and the K means control. If we control precisely the gross activities of that maw or appetite volition, the process is called magic. We are doing it all the time, unconsciously. And unconscious magic is no good for individuals. We have to control it. All suggestibility is magic. You know that under hypnotic suggestion, people can have precipitated into them all sorts of symptoms which appear physically. If this process is outside the control of the person showing the symptoms, then it is not magic by him, it is magic by the other fellow, the suggester. But if the suggester himself is only applying a formula, like say a trained medical hypnotist using a device or a drug, then it is not magic as far as he is concerned. Magic implies the use of the will to precipitate a gross material situation. Thus magic can, in fact, because the universe is a field of force, magic can precipitate the appearance of a friend on a given point in space outside the Liverpool gallery or something. Whether he likes it or not, he does not know how to defend himself. He will appear in that place at that time when a person who understands this process wills his presence, then he will appear. And this process is magic. Now, all the gross materials produced by magical processes are the objects that your five senses tell you of. But there is no gross material in the universe that is not primarily a function of magic. So that every material particle, every electron, every proton, any other kind of tron there is, they're all a product of cosmic magic. This is the same as Maya of the Hindu creator, where he precipitates the gross material world by an act of volition. And that process is magic. Now the scientist is a man who is confined by the fact that he's a scientist. This is a look to see. He sees entities, and consequently there is a reaction between two gross precipitate beings. And this reaction is what we call sense knowledge. Now it doesn't matter how cleverly these manipulations of gross matter are done, they are not magic. They are manipulations at the sense level. And they can never produce a material. They can only manipulate one that has been produced. And yet all the materials in the universe are produced by this universal magical process. So that will serve as a definition of the distinction between magic and science. Science is concerned with material manipulations, focus on the gross material particles, and magic is concerned with a function of the will of a person who is deliberately manipulating the field of the universe and so disposing the field that the material bodies within it are constrained to behave in a way that otherwise they would not do. And therefore, there can be no magic in this sense without a magician. That is, it means somewhere there is an individual, a person evolved to a certain level where he can deliberately precipitate a situation without acting directly upon the physical body. You may remember Aleister Crowley once defined magic as simply the production of effects in conformity with the will, and then proceeded to degenerate the definition by saying that to get on a bus and give, by act of will, some money to a conductor and he to give you a ticket was an act of magic. Well, it is not an act of magic in our sense, because it has mediated through the nervous system in the ordinary manner. Whereas in the magical act, it doesn't. In the magical act, the conductor gives you a ticket, and he may or may not have got any money for it. He has just felt like giving you a ticket. And it is this kind of magic that people are concerned with when they hear about it, because it transcends the limitations imposed on a being by the five senses. And this is the only kind of magic worth bothering with, because the other kind is just another name for the same fact that you have to work very, very hard to get the pennies to give to the bus conductor. So we will confine ourselves now to the clarification of this magical process in relation to an individual human being. There's a question on here about the zodiac in relation to it, so we can utilize this zodiacal image again. We've said, if we put the George cross on the zodiac, on the arms of that cross there are four signs. Those points we call the cardinal points. Hinge points. Cardinal means hinge. The sign of the ram is the sign belonging specifically to nervous energy. Energy which appears in the nervous system. It does not originate in it, it appears in it. This sign of the ram relates specifically to the magical process as an act of will. The sign of Cancer here relates specifically to feeling, that whereby you become aware of the field. Here is your volitional process, here is the feeling process. First you must feel the field and its state. And when you have felt it, then you could apply your will to it. But first you must feel it. If you do not first become conscious of the feeling of the body, you cannot find the tensions in the body that require correction. Remember, there's nothing outside the human being that is not inside. The whole universe itself is known as a universe only by a man who is himself a universe. If he were not a universe, then his knowledge of the universe would necessarily be deficient. So if we draw a little circle and a big circle, and draw the line straight through again, then there's nothing inside that man that is not outside, and nothing outside that is not inside. So we say man is a little cosmos, he's a microcosmos, and everything in the macrocosmos here is inside man. And if it were otherwise, if he were short of a quarter here, then there'd be a quarter of the universe that he couldn't know about. So if he feels his condition, simply because he is exactly the same as this big universe, this macrocosmos, if he feels his condition, he is feeling the condition of the macrocosmos. If you cut down all excessive activity of mind and body, you come down to a substratum feeling. If you reduce that feeling down below the level of the individual stress, you don't find nothing, you find the universal field behind it. So this sign of Cancer is the feeling sign, which tells you you must learn to feel, to increase sensitivity to the feel. You should be able to put your feeling over the whole room and feel every center in that room to be a center of a different motion. And when you felt all those different motions, there emerges from them, without effort by you, without special judgment, a resultant. This resultant is then the field force in which you are to operate. In other words, the totality of formal characteristic actions of all the beings in this room add up to a certain result. In that total result, something can be done, a next legitimate step. If you can feel it, you can make that step. If you can't feel it, then whatever step you make will be wrong. So in this sign of Cancer, remember it's ruled by the moon, the feeling sign, the sign of the substance of your body, the moon is the substantial aspect, is the feeling of the whole field and all its content, so that when you decide to use your volition, you will not use it unintelligently. We then come into the air sign Libra here, which is perception. And this gives you the formal aspects, which in Cancer are feeling awareness. There is a total feeling in this room. But if I look with my eyes, I see particular forms. Those particular forms are all symbolized in this Libra symbol. So the formal aspect of the field is there, with my five senses, with my eyes, with my ears. If you speak, I will hear particular tones in the voice. Tones are tremendously important. And with the aid of these tones, added to my feeling, I will be able to pin the precise formal content for the feeling of that being. So here is the form. Here is the feeling. Now, over here is an air sign, Capricorn, and this tells us the gross material fact, which has a certain form and a certain feeling. That represents your physical body. We've all got physical bodies. And those physical bodies, by the fact of being made of matter, are limited in certain ways. That's Mr. 5x5 and another gentleman, 9 feet 2 and a bit, have different physical capacities, even though they may both appreciate Beethoven. Now, their physical capacities are limiting factors upon them. The length of the spine itself is like a string in a musical instrument. The spine, according to its length, responds to specific vibrations. So a short, thick spine doesn't respond in the same way as a long, thin one. So even on the purely physical level, let's do a square on that to remind us. On the purely physical level, there are limitations in the body. Now we see here now a device tells us how to examine the environment. Every symbol, this is a symbol, is a seed, sim, of will, volition. This is the old form of ball, will, balling itself up. A will is simply a balled up appetite, which is a ball, which becomes in the Latin B2V, volition. This is seed. Seed of will. If we understand this diagram properly and use it, we will know what things we must examine in a given situation. We do not use our will until we have first felt the whole field. And then, inside the whole, not beforehand, inside the whole, we perceive the form, the shape of all the beings. And then, having perceived the shape, we consider the grossness of the body. Some people are more gross in the body than others. Some people with exactly the same education and born in the same family are born in different parts of the zodiac and therefore have different gross material possibilities. And the possibilities for a person born there are not the same as a person born there. Nor can they be. So we have to consider the gross material of the beings we are dealing with. To put a simple example, if we take, a double vase, and we make it in aluminium, and another one in glass, and another one in the properly seasoned wood, and bow them all in the same way, we'll get different tones out of them, won't we? And that we do get different tones out of them means that the gross matter of it is conditioning it. Finger it so carefully, bow it so perfectly, the tone cannot be the same. And therefore, with the human being, there are some people are made like violins in brick. And you shouldn't expect the same kind of tone out of them that you would get out of a Gunnarius or something. So you have to allow for the gross material fact of somebody's being. Some beings with the best intentions in the world will say beings born in the sign Virgo. People born in the sign of Virgo are good beings. They feel good, and they are good. But they have a stress on them that makes them rather inertic on the outside. On the inside, they're governed by Mercury, and they're very, very much quicker than they appear on the outside. But we cannot constrain the outside organism of that being to respond in the same way that a person born in the sign of Pisces over here, a highly mobile and emotional sign. So we have to accept the gross matter. If I make some new bells for the Liverpool Cathedral and I make them in felt, they won't ring properly. So we have to consider the gross material out of which that body is made, the form in which that body is made, and the field force which we experience as a whole. This gives us the whole experience. This analyzes the formal content of the whole field, and this one tells us, remember the gross material limitation of that body. I know two little girls, the daughters of a friend of mine, and one of them has been trained to turn into a ballet dancer, and the other one has not. The one that has not moves beautifully, The one that has been trained can't move at all. It just happens that the parents wanted one of the children to move properly, and they chose the wrong one. The one that couldn't was the one they wanted to. She hasn't got the gross material substance needed. If we want her to do it, first we should starve her completely, I mean this literally, reduce her to near death by depriving her of all the gross matter, and then give her a very, very special diet, and she would gradually build up an entirely new organism which would refute her birth position. It used to be done in the old days to starve somebody right down to the lowest level, even put them above them and pickle them. So this symbol tells us what we must remember, three aspects before we use our volition. We must be aware of the whole field. Supposing there was some person here who had a friend, a real friend, and supposing I decided, without examining the situation at all, to attack X, and X has a friend, Y, and as soon as I go to attack X, Y hits me. That's my fault. First, I should feel the whole field to see if there are any friends before I strike. That is to remind us, feel the whole field. Then I must look very, very carefully at the shapes, the forms, because the doctrine of signatures tells us that every form is evidence of a specific spiritual precipitation. So the character is in the form. When I've got the form, then I must still look at the dietetic content of that being, at the gross matter of that being, and see whether the form in that being can act easily through that matter. Because some people have wonderful form inside them, and through an accident of birth, they cannot operate it. There are innumerable geniuses, potential ones, in the wrong organisms. We have to remember this underlying point. Now, charity begins at home, and therefore we should apply this principle to ourselves. We should say, how do I feel holy? And then when we have this whole consciousness, look into the mind for the ideas. Ideas are forms. Look at the ideas in the mind, and look at the shapes of the body which you perceive, and see what they suggest to you, and relate your feeling to those ideas and form and content. Then examine your gross material body and see if it has the wherewithal to fulfill the formal possibilities and the feeling purposes which arise in, and only then apply your volition. Every time a man acts without weighing up in this manner, he acts mechanically. That is accidental. That is, he's not acting volitionally at all. There is your physical body. There's your feeling, and there's your perception. Now, in another diagram, there is perception, and there is feeling, and there is your physical body. If a stimulus comes onto the physical body, it produces, by the fact that that physical body is physical, a reaction. That reaction reverberates. A biologist would call it the irritability of substance, biological substance, tissue. Living tissue, in vibrating, has a parallel motion of the psyche called feeling, and it is either pleasant or painful in some degree. Simultaneously, in the field, a formal precipitate appears, and that is the idea or shape. If I put an apple here, and that apple is shone upon by a light, and the light hits me in the eye, and I become aware at the physical level that there is an apple image on my retina, then there arises in me a motion in the substance which feels, according to the fullness or not of my stomach, a pleasure or lack of it in the presentation of the apple. And simultaneously that is recorded in my memory that the percept is of an apple. and the two are then linked together so that my feeling and perception tend to fuse. Now, if they do fuse to the point of losing their initial origins, we call it confusion. All confusion is simply mixing up things that should be kept separate. The physical body registers a certain kind of stimulus. The feeling body registers pleasure or pain about it. And the thinking body registers the shape, the colour, and so on. If you keep these three separate in you, then you can control them. But if you allow them to become confused, fused together, then they will act upon you and you will not be able to do anything about it. Because as long as the idea and the feeling are flowing across there without control, this goes on continuously, and reaction. If you cannot see the shape of the thing separate from the feeling of pleasure or pain, and that separate from the gross material fact, then you fall continuously into reaction. And all reaction is not volition. When people say, "I will do so and so," they are using the word will illegitimately, because they don't know what will is. Will is initiative power. It is not initiative when my knee-jerk response is demonstrated. It is not will. It is a mechanical process. Gurdjieff on one occasion said that the reason people cannot get this freedom is because they think they already have it. People think they can think, and they think they can will. This is one of the oldest things. If we go back 4,000 years, we find this same statement made. People cannot have what they think they already have, because they won't work towards it, believing they already have it. Most people believe that they can think what they would call fairly logically. And most people think that they can feel what they want to feel. And they think they can see what is. Whereas, in fact, something totally different goes on. A body stimulus is presented. A message goes through here. Fires across into Aquarius, which is the memory field. So that a percept resounds across here in the whole field of the memory and induces memories of all other apples and all nice girls who gave them, and confuses the whole situation, and then that situation fires across over here to Gemini and reasons, or believes it has reasons, that is to say, there is a mechanical balancing process where it then recognizes out here that apple, and what it has recognized is about 90% memory and not that apple, which you can prove very easily with an ordinary wax apple mixed in with some other apples. There's no discrimination there until they have been tricked. And this kind of process goes on. Begins to look like an enneagram if you don't watch it, isn't it? We'll have to curb it. If this process of stimulus, perception, memory, mechanical reasoning, recognition of percept is allowed to go on, it can never hit that volition. That's still in the enneagram. And this mysterious triangle has got to be found. And everything is firing all across it, and nothing is getting in it. Now, when the feeling is roused, again, it fires across through the feeling level down to Scorpio. And Scorpio is the part of yourself that is attached in the feeling to pleasures already had. So Scorpio immediately fires straight through to Pisces, which is emotion or outflowing motion. And that motion then flies back into the feeling and reinforces it. And again it appears that the thing has been verified, and now the whole body is in a state of feeling fantasy. These processes are going on simultaneously inside your body. We are analysing them. They go on in the space, some of them in the small part of a second. And some of the processes are so fast that you cannot deal with them at all at the sense level. Although it's quite easy to deal with them at another level. So there's our feeling process. Now, once we have reaffirmed that this gross material body is the one we think it is, quite erroneously, then it fires across to Taurus here and starts a process of secretion in the body. In Taurus here, secretions begin, and those secretions in the glands are then passed into the blood and circulated throughout the physical body. You now have a mesh or a mess. You have processes there going on continuously, all of them non-volitional, and therefore all of them, from the point of view of the individual, mechanical. And if you don't break them down, you will not get on to this mysterious triangle, the one you want. So we have to use this symbol. It looks a bit difficult to use, isn't it? We have to use this symbol to remind ourselves to watch ourselves on these different levels. When we have watched ourselves on three levels, on the feeling level, the idea perception level, and the gross material possibility of our body, which may vary from moment to moment or day to day. Sometimes your body is sluggish. You've eaten something not good for you. Sometimes you've had a congestion and it's interfered with the organic processes, and the body won't respond even to the good ideas you've got. Sometimes practice doesn't know properly, does it? Even when you know exactly where to put your fingers, it's not the same today. The body isn't responding. Sometimes you just don't feel like it. The body's fine. Your formal knowledge is fine and you don't feel like it. Performance isn't good. But you have to become aware of those three. When you are aware of those three simultaneously presented, and this is a bit of a jump, then, and not before, can you go on to the triangle of volition, in which the undifferentiated absolute energy, which is the divine energy, called Do for Dio here, that energy then mobilizes itself in Neo. That is, it rolls itself up into a ball, and then it throws itself in Sagittarius here at the object. Now we have to understand precisely what goes on here. It is impossible to use volition until all else has been scrubbed out, because as long as that reaction is occurring, it interferes with volition. Volition is free. What is not free is not volition. So the philosophical argument about whether the will is free or not is a misconception. Will, by definition, is free. If it is not free, it is not will. So these three processes are not volitional, and until we have managed to understand them perfectly and then suspended them, only then can we insert will. And then we take the field of the universe and we roll it into a ball and then throw it at the target. Diabolos is the word, one of the names of the devil. Diabolos means to will through, to throw through. And you have to throw through all the obstacles on those three levels your will. Now, it's hard work, and it requires a terrific amount of personal observation to do it. And because we are under the inheritance of Adam, who's a no-good, and who has bequeathed to us a lot of bad habits and some funny traditions, we have to go almost invariably against our inclination. But not forever, just until we can succeed in doing it. So then we have to apply this rule, how to become volitional. We have to break the material body dominion, which we do by a series of little exercises. The body, for instance, of itself tends to assume positions of comfort. If you can hold a position of discomfort for a few seconds longer than usual, you have inserted that much will into it. If you can break a posture that you habitually use for a minute, then for that minute you are a free being. If after that you forget, which is usual, then your freedom has departed. You examine all your body habits and you take one at a time, and the smallest one first, otherwise you'll break your heart. Take the smallest one first and defeat it. Faithful in little, faithful in much. Don't try to take a big habit and conquer it, because you will fail and then you'll become disgusted with yourself and you won't give up altogether. Take a tiny little habit and break it. That is the overthrowing of the inertia of the gross body. When you have done one of those, don't go on immediately to break another physical habit bigger. Go on immediately to find the feeling equivalent of that little habit that you've broken, and stop the field flux. This is very important. One of the oldest statements we have that's useful is that it is no good working on one level at a time. We must work on all levels if the work is to be effective. And yet we have to begin by working on one level. This is why we work only a tiny little bit at a time. We must break a physical habit and then break the feeling hankering after its recurrence. When you break a habit, you will find a feeling tries to restate it, although you've broken it. So the physical habit will remind you of a feeling which is originally generative of the habit. So you take the tiniest little physical habit and stop it. And then you find a feeling build up in your body which tries to restate that habit. And when you've broken the physical habit, you then try to curb yourself from this feeling. You try to eliminate the feeling that wants to make the habit. And when you've got hold of that feeling, you define it as clearly as you can. You're now moving on a different level, on the thinking level. You define the formal content of that feeling which is tending to cause the recurrence of that habit. Now this is work. It isn't play. You cannot evolve by play. You can only evolve by working. And only in this way. You must begin with the little things. Seriously break one. Watch your feeling, which will try to restate it. No matter how tiny it is, if it's only going like this once a fortnight, it will try to restate itself. Define accurately the exact formal content of the habit, so that you can recognize precisely what in the form is determinant. A man may have a very, very good vibrato, you know. I think it's rather a good thing, and he'll get it going. And it may dominate him. Sometimes it does. When it dominates him, then he hasn't got it anymore. It has him. And a physical activity now is going to dictate to him a concept, an idea of himself as a vibrato, and so on, whatever it is. And then there will arise a feeling of pleasure that he is such a being, and this will feed back onto the body and re-establish it in the gross material world. And so gradually, by this process of feedback, a very modern process, it engrams the habits deeper and deeper and deeper. And they become virtually unbreakable by an individual without help from outside. An individual, once that habit has reached a certain level, does not know that he's got it. It has become for him some threshold, and therefore he cannot fight it, because he doesn't know it's there. So he needs somebody to remind him that it's there, and an agreement that they shall work in order to break it. This is the process of breaking it. First, take any habit whatever. Second, feel that flux of pleasure or pain. Your habits are either pleasant or painful in origin. Some habits are indulgent, and some are trying to prevent you from exposing yourself to a painful situation. Define the formal situation exactly, and then you start feeding the thing away all the time from the physical body to analyze and feel. In this feeling, we bisect the angle and go across here. When we bisect the angle between feeling and thinking, it allows us to break this triangle of mechanics. It puts us out of a gross material mechanicality, a gross material bondage. And it fires us straight across here and allows us to go on to another level of being. And each level of being has a vibration peculiar to itself. And the faster the vibration, the nearer it is to cause. And what we're looking for in the pursuit of magic, of will, is cause. The ability to cause rather than to suffer things. So this allows us to go on to another level. A level not the gross material. And the whole process repeats on this wonderfully clear diagram throughout all the other signs, so that we can deliberately, if we know how, change our level from a gross material to a thinking level. We can lift the thinking level of the ordinary mind with its five senses onto another level, the higher thinking level. And we can lift the emotions by the same technique onto a totally different level, which an ordinary man wouldn't know anything about. And it is by this process of feeling and ideation, driving them together and yet stopping them from confusing, clarity of form and definition, thorough awareness of pleasure-pain content of each form. Out of this arises the transcendence of that plane and the appearance of another. Now there is an ordinary man, and down here is his earth sign. I'll put Capricorn there, and up here we'll put Libra for his perceptions, and in the middle here we'll put Cancer on his chest. Now the ordinary process that men are suffering from, and they think they are doing things deliberately, is a simple reflex. And Freud was not wrong when he said that those reflexes are sexual in origin. But he was referring only to unfree men, that is, only to nearly everybody. If this process of reflex action is curbed, then that very, very same energy changes its phase and becomes volition. And in the same way, if this process of pleasure-pain determination is curbed and understood and felt properly, a new center, centered in the larynx, operates, and a new kind of feeling, a new level of emotion is experienced, which is infallible. And if this process of perception is separated out from memory elements, then objective perception of fact occurs and a new thinking center is broken into. Now, an ordinary being has three obvious parts and only uses two of them, and neither of them deliberately. His head might as well not exist. A stimulus hits him, he rises up into the pain or the pleasure department. And any thinking that exists in him is purely mechanical and backfires down here as a preventative measure. Any pleasure that recurs from an experience causes a re-involvement. The integration of the sense data can only be accomplished by meditation on certain symbols. A symbol is a seed of will. When you begin to see the general in the particular, and you see that the general is only the particular spread over many cases, and then you pass from the general to the universal, then you change your five-pointed star for a six-pointed star. And then you start thinking cosmically. Now that higher thinking center is higher than your higher emotional center, because that represents the truth, whereas sense data represent only partial aspects of truth. Untrained man works Somewhere in the brain. Perhaps a little part of the mind at the back of the head, out of which he talks, operates. Otherwise, he knows nothing at all of a higher kind of emotion, symbolized in the Christian agape, and the logos, reason, and the Gospel of John. Those two are just words, and yet they exist and they can be got hold of, providing the organism is disciplined physically by breaking certain habit processes that keep the man in a mechanical reactive state, the state that Christ calls dead. Gurdjieff calls asleep. And dead people are simply the reflex jerk people. In the feeling self here is the awareness possibility of the whole process. Our need is to get more and more feeling, because out of that feeling awareness gradually comes the possibility of clarification of the formal content. Now, conscience is conscience, not in the empirical sense, science in the sense of knowledge and what is seen. Conscience is the totality of your knowledge, the totality of it. Less than the totality of it is not conscience, it's partiality. If you can get to the level of seeing the totality of the significances of this muddy diagram, then you have reached conscience. And conscience itself only operates totally. Less than that is not conscience. So that every partiality, every preference for a particular over against another particular is not conscience. It is also no good for you ultimately, because it drives you away from the whole that you're seeking. And remember, only the whole is in perfect equilibrium. Any part of it is necessarily in disequilibrium. So if you identify with a part, you place yourself in that which is disequilibrated, and you will fall into action. And falling into action is not volition. So if you want volition, you must become totally conscious, which means hard work. You must know that you have a physical body, and you've got to know it all day long. You must know the limitations in that physical body as they change hour to hour. There are 5 gross changes every hour in the body, quite independently of any individual ones induced by relations with other beings. You must be aware of your feeling of pleasure or pain, liking and disliking, of everything going on inside you and in your relation with external beings. And you must continuously clarify, by accurate definition, the formal situation in which you stand, so that you know exactly what it is about that man that annoys you or pleases you. It may be there's nothing on him except the top button on his waistcoat which is about to fall off or something. It might be as simple as that, but you must be able to define it. If you can define it accurately, you will pin a feeling. When you pin that feeling, it cannot run away. It cannot leak. To define accurately is to fix. Now, the whole of this body, this diagram now symbolizes your total being, the whole of that body, when it is in total consciousness, and its various levels in consciousness, you're aware of the totality of it, then it cannot fall to bits, and it is called the diamond body, or the crystalline body. Gurdjieff refers to it as crystallization. Jung refers to it as integration. The Buddhists call it the diamond body. It is that body which is the totality of all formal, feeling, material and volitional impulses, which, being in their totality balanced, cannot fall apart. That is the immortal body. And every physical body of a human being is potentially such a body. And the resident of every physical body has already started in some degree to move towards it, in that he has become human at all. So the creation of the diamond body, the Vajra, the thunderbolt, whatever we prefer to call it, the undisintegratable, the immortal body requires us to become aware of gross material fact, of the substance, whether it's fit or not for a given job, the feeling of pleasure, pain and reactions to the whole environment, specific clear definition of the formal content of the environment, internal and external, and over and above all, the continuous insertion of absolute energy into the volitional triad. That is the way it's got to be done. Now, have you got any specific points that could be clarified about this?
If, for instance, you have been in a situation and certain stimulus have been given to you, if you go away and you sit down and recap that situation and observe those reactions that existed within you through that stimulus, are you able to discern the nature of the stimulus that was being applied to you?
Well, this of course depends on the individual level and the amount of energy applied in the self-examination. You must be on guard always about falling into general statements about people in general or abstract beings that could do it. The question is, can you do it? Can you gather yourself together? If we put the word if into it, if, how so, you see, as if we were brilliantly clever and could sit down and take in the situation, recap it, and impartially view it. If we do that, we will be released from it. And in the process, we will gain a whole lot of energy that we would otherwise have lost. What you have to do in practice is deliberately do precisely that. Every time you get knocked off center, be very, very glad that you've been knocked off center. Because if you're not knocked off center by somebody, you will not know where you've got to work. Because this thing has got to be equilibrated. And where disequilibrium exists, you won't know about it unless somebody attacks it. And this somebody may or may not be a friend. But he's a friend nevertheless. A friend is a being that, by his activity, leads you towards freedom. He's a friend, really, a freeing being. If he does it with the intention of harming you, he's just an ignorant friend. But if he does it deliberately and consciously to help you, he's a very, very good friend. Every time you experience a displeasure in a situation, be very, very glad immediately, because that displeasure, analyzed and formally pinpointed, is going to place at your disposal energy that you would never otherwise know about. So you should deliberately, if possible, go about trying to be insulted, to watch your own reactions. The directly unfortunate thing is that when you start looking for it, people go on guard and become careful about insulting. So you might even have to hide from people your thick skinness instead of your thin skinness. This is the way everything inverts the moment you go on the magical path.
And when you're talking about magic, could you say that what has happened in the case of magic is that there has been a reversal of the pressure? What I mean to say by that is that the average person is driven and buffeted about by external stimulus. The magical man is actually pressing into the outside world, isn't he? He is moving the outside world the way he wants to.
Yes, but it's not outside, it's inside.
Well, it's a reversal of action, though, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, but remember that in order to be magical, you must identify with the absolute field, so that the world shrinks inside it. You can't work on a person from outside.
No.
I can't give you a magical message if I believe that you're over there. Mm-hmm. I can only do it if I know that you're inside my consciousness and field.
But there has nevertheless been a reversal of normal process.
Oh yes, yes. Providing you're clear in your mind that there is nothing outside you. If you want to be a magician, you can't afford anything to be outside you.
You have to understand your field really, so you embrace everything, haven't you?
You haven't even done that. You merely recognize that your field was extended. You see, egotism consists of identification with a little body and their pretense that that little body is all you are. It happens to be untrue. If you start feeling for the edge of your feeling, you won't find it. Because your field is actually infinite. We're not dealing with things that have to be made that are not in existence. These things exist. Our field is infinite. What we have to do is become aware of it. And in order to become aware of it, we must stop this grab onto the gross material body, which is the smallest one we've got. We're not gaining anything at all that isn't already legitimately ours. Remember the definition of the Bhagavad Gita. Whatever is can never cease to be, and what is not can never come to be. So we are not trying to get hold of something that doesn't belong to us. All we are doing is coming into our own when we become aware that our field, which we thought went up to the edge of our skin, is factually infinite. What we also discover is a very peculiar thing, that field is the same field that everybody else feels when they likewise claim what legitimately belongs to them. For which reason a person with a total consciousness can never disagree with another person with a total consciousness. So there's no possible disagreement between men who have integrated themselves. Disagreement means already consciousness is at the partial level and is arguing about the parts. You remember the Indian story about the elephant and the blind men feeling the leg and the tail and the trunk and describing what they had found. And one thought it was a snake and another thought it was a tree trunk and another thought it was a piece of rope. That was partiality. The fact of the whole elephant is the same for all men who can see. And so the whole universe in its totality cannot be an object of disagreement to those beings that see it. And therefore, if you find any tendency in you to disagree with anybody, no matter what they say, it means, where that tendency is, that you are identified with a partial aspect of being. And if instead of fighting that being about this partial expression, you yourself put that part in your mind, remembering that the inside of the man is the same as the outside, put that part inside yourself in its right constellation, you don't need to argue about that part with the man on the outside. And if you don't, you do a funny thing. You deprive him of the only thing whereby he knows that he exists, namely a point of reaction.
Opposition.
Nobody knows, no person, no personal consciousness can exist unless it finds something to hit against and get a reaction. This is the secret of magical invisibility. If you deliberately cut down your reactions, nobody can see you. They don't even know you're in the room if you cut them down altogether. Which is a funny thing, but it's a fact that people cannot see you if you cut down your reactions completely. You simply lapse from their consciousness.
This has to do with field flux, I take it.
Well, it has to do with identification. As long as people are identified with partials, they are seeking partial reaction. If you know the kind of reaction they're seeking, which you do by feeling, defining, and making an allowance for the gross body, then you can become very visible to that person by simply hitting him on a point of his reaction. On the other hand, if you find all the things that he reacts to and you deliberately avoid them, he doesn't know you're there. Now this needs meditating on, because it happens to be true. People are doing it all day long. When you get an idea, a symbolic statement like that, you have to work on it, see what it means. Try it on the people you know. Look in people for their physical dispositions, their formal content, ideas expressed, and their general feeling conditions. Find out what things they react to, what things they find pleasant and painful, what particular formal ideas please and displease them, and appear to them as true or untrue, and their general physical bias. And then deliberately act upon those things and you will become a real Bethnaya to them. You'll be the focal center of existence because you'll be the chief point off which their energies are bouncing and being returned. Then having done that, deliberately cut them all down again and you'll find that that same person suddenly doesn't know you exist. And this you can do as an experiment. And it's in that kind of physical experiment that you will become convinced of the validity of this process of gaining freedom.
Sounds a little bit like the children of the memory on the amoeba principle, right?
Well, of course, it's the same principle. A human being is only a glorified amoeba with a stick down the middle of it.
Is this really action and reaction? If there's no action, there can be no reaction.
Yes. But you see, it's very hard to realize what this means. I am saying that if there is a personal, individual consciousness in the universe, it cannot know that it is unless it fires the stimulus out and gets an echo back. Which means that every human being coagulating in cities is doing so because one of two reasons. Because they are needing a reaction, or they're determined to give a stimulus for some purpose. And in most cases, they are coagulating together because they don't exist. They literally don't exist to themselves unless they can get a reaction from other people. It doesn't matter whether the reaction is good or bad, an insult's all right because it hets you up a bit, makes you feel really new, a good insult. Whereas supreme indifference to you is a terrible thing. People die if they are ignored. It's a very strange thing. Even animals do it sometimes. Just like pussycats and dogs put in a kennel while their owners go on holiday. During that period, they decline. Very, very seldom do they keep their health because they're not getting the necessary response. And they must know their own being by the response from other beings in the environment. Which means that you have power of life and death in your hands over other beings when you can control yourself. Because when you can control yourself, you can inhibit response. And if you do so, somebody starts to die.
You can actually start with the impression that
you're... Yeah, of course you are. Remember the different levels of food that you take in. You can actually deprive a child, for instance, born and totally ignored by his parents, dies.
About
the process?
Yes.
Yes, well, I'll just do a little winding of this thing. Yeah. Yes, mine here. Yes. Roots. Leaves. Flowers. We've got here now a threefold being embedded in a fourth. So it's something like this diagram in disguise. There is a gross material body of matter there. All the tangibleness of this plant is simply matter lifted up by an anti-gravity force. Now, the roots of this thing are related to the belly of the human being. And the leaves of this plant are related to the lungs of a human being and have a similar function. And the flower of this thing is related to the head of the human being and to the seeds. Now, this is the general principle of all dietary tricks. If we take these root vegetables, we are acting upon this volitional center. And we are piling it up in that zone. Remember, that zone is the zone of non-formulated will. So those roots, in general, will not aid formulation, but they will give a certain substantial weight, like a Japanese wrestler specializes in. If we eat the leaves of plants, we are going to act on our emotional nature. There are many vegetables on which we eat leaves, and all of these develop in the emotional nature. And if we eat the seeds in here, and the petals, not from edible flowers, some lovely stuff in Kendall's basement, petal jam and so on, If we eat those, we are acting upon this seed department. This started as a seed down here, this bird. So there's a reflection between that seed down there at a particular time, and not before and not later. The chemistry in the head and the chemistry in the sexual seed down there are very, very closely related. So there is sexual energy in the head here, and there is sexual energy down there, but this is concerned with gross material generation. If that energy is not used up in gross material generation or otherwise thrown away, it permeates the whole being and builds what has seriously been called the astral body. The chemistry of that seed is like the chemistry in that seed, except here there's a special earth field keeping it in potentia. So down here is the grossest part of food, and as it lifts it up from the earth, it changes its phase, and this becomes a finer energy acting on the emotions, and this one becomes finer acting upon the definitional functions, the higher thinking functions. So if we use the seeds, fruits and so on, and the fruits come inside the flowers, if we eat plenty of fruits and so on, we're actually improving our higher thinking capacities. If we use plenty of these leaf plants, then we are improving our emotional response. And when we eat this stuff down here, we are packing our substantial will. And if we want to produce certain effects of balance, we eat some of each. Remember, an animal has nothing in it that it hasn't derived from the plant. And these are three phases of energy. And they have their own centers outside the earth. And these three centers have made themselves in the earth and used the earth to make a gross material body. So the correspondences, the value of certain drugs like opium and so on, depends in them being derived from here. Some others for emotional phases, lifting the emotions up to the level even when they can perceive strange things not normally perceptible, are finer frequencies, far finer than most people know about in their ordinary emotional condition. If we deliberately cut out all the roots and all the leaves and live on fruits only for a considerable time, then we'll find that our level of perception changes considerably, that a certain kind of alertness comes in the mind. And after you've done that for, say, 6 months, and then you deliberately go and eat a large dinner of plain mashed potatoes, quite suddenly your whole consciousness will drop and you feel profoundly dull as if you're modelling clay. And it's by that kind of experiment that you show yourself by extreme, you see, we know the middle, that you know precisely what kind of effect that has on the body in isolation. To take any given one of them and persevere in it for a time, and then quite suddenly go on to the other and notice the change in consciousness. Now, the whole purpose of the earth, I must now curve this earth line, is to serve as a reaction center for the absolute. Every material particle is a device precipitated by the absolute to serve as a reflection point so that it can make for itself omniscience. It can only know by reaction. So the absolute has precipitated the material world to reflect its forces back to it. In the same way that one individual only knows himself by the reaction he gets from another individual, so the absolute has precipitated the world of matter so that from that world shall be reflected the energies from the absolute. So if we say, there is the earth, there's the absolute, then everything will go back that comes. This is part of the reciprocal feeding idea. Now, if we didn't set up another boundary here, it would vanish absolutely. So the process goes like this. And in actual fact, there's a little one in Sandown we call the moon, which is the absolute dead end of minerality. Now, these are reflection points. The absolute itself, the Aleph level, reflects on there and remains free. Coming inside this circle, it reflects here. And this is cosmic consciousness. Not absolute, cosmic consciousness. Most people are satisfied with that. And down here, we're getting into the solar consciousness, and down there, the pure minerality, the lunar consciousness. So as we're coming in and building these zones of reaction, we are constructing the possibility of intelligences of various orders. The absolute remains absolutely free because it absorbs all the energies reflected infinitely. Macrocosmos, being a closed system, reflects the energies to its perimeter from an internal sphere. And that one reflects further within itself. So if we said that's the type of planet, that's the type of sun, that's the type of star, and there's the beyond. We have a series of possibilities. Here is a big cosmic consciousness, which people call God, as an object to worship. And internal to that is another one, which in Hindu systems and elsewhere would be called one of the gods, because there are many suns called stars. And then down here are the beings called men. And the same law applies to all. If a point of reaction can be gained for the absolute force, because that absolute force is Satchidananda, it is a being with consciousness and motion. Because it is that, if it can get a point of reaction, it becomes in its own right a reflexive self-conscious being. So because of that, we know that there is a macrocosmic intelligence called God, internal to which are various other intelligences, angelic hierarchies and so on, down to visible worlds. So again, we get a jolly good lesson out of this symbol. It tells us that we can find levels of reflection, levels of response. If we find what we call an intellectually biased man, and we deliberately note and say we've got a lovely pussy at home with a white spot on its left ear, and then froth about it, you'll probably frown on us. We're not hitting him on his proper sphere. And so we won't get the appropriate reaction. So if we study the type, we know exactly at what level to strike him to get the reaction back. And remember, the reaction makes us reflexively self-conscious. So if he shuts up absolutely and we are not able to find a better target, we will die. People die every day, don't they? And if we want to do him a service, we show him how he can increase the responses by becoming more conscious of the different levels at which he must stimulate other beings. You say in the battle of the sexes, a woman is continuously, what do they call them, Spanish men of war, don't they? And they are floating about in the water, trailing their fins, and they are certainly not aggressive, so they cannot be said to be ill in intent. And when the little fishes go in and get stung, it isn't the fault of the Spanish men of war because they don't hunt. It's the fault of the fishes for being pleased with the dangling scintillators. Nevertheless, there's a general feeling there of acquiring new methods of undulation to charm the fishes. Meanwhile, in the fishes, there is a tendency to identify with darting movements and penetrating into situations. Now, the object is to become aware at what level that person tends to respond. This is Circe's trick with those unfortunate men. When she turned them into pigs, she did so by studying their level of reaction, and then by the law of association, changing that level to another level. For instance, if you find an intellectual man who believes himself a pure intellectual, and you talk to him and say, because you are a pure intellectual, you must include within your survey everything whatever that exists. He says, yes. And you say, and sensations exist, and feelings exist, and therefore they must be considered by you intellectually. So we'll have you now considering intellectually pleasure and pain. And because he's an intellectualist, he will agree to consider pleasure and pain intellectually. And we can then persuade him intellectually to do some experiments for intellectual reasons in pleasures and pain. And before he knows where he is, he's gone off his intellectual plane onto another plane. And from the pleasure pain level, we can induce him to go into the sensation level, because pleasure and pain are only reactions to sensations. And from the sensations to mechanical stimuli. So we can get him right out of the intellectual world into the gross world by defining the situation in his terms. Now really everybody's trying to do this all day long on everybody. Advertising copywriters and TV program makers are concerned with trying to find out the response level of humanity at large. The thing is to find out your own response level to other beings. Because only by working on yourself on the inside can you gain the freedom that you need.
Coming back to your former diagram, Mr. Holliday, the fire signs in a large number of the astrological systems are correlated with the nervous system. This is approximately correct.
Yes.
Yes.
If you are referring to the energy in the nervous system.
Yes. Yes.
Remember, the funny thing about the nervous system, it is generally taught to be a means of communication with the different parts of the body, isn't it?
Yes.
You have a brain, and it is sending messages down wires, nerves, and the nerves have been evolved in order to send messages. That is the current teaching, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It happens to be the exact opposite of the truth. The truth is that the nervous system is a method of not receiving messages that you don't want. Every message going down a nerve is going down an insulated wire. The nervous system is insulated. So if you want to send a message to your little finger, it goes to your little finger, not to your left ear. And the purpose of this is to shield you from absoluteness. The nervous system is a method of insulating your absoluteness so that you can deal with things through your insulation system one at a time, and then in groups, and finally in the totality. And at the top level, you throw your nervous system away, you don't use it. And you have to be quite clear about that. It is not a method of communication. It is a method of non-communication with the things you don't want. It's quite a simple method to demonstrate that with the nervous system. It is an insulation system with little gaps running all the way through it in the synapses, specially made so that you do not communicate with God perpetually, with the absolute, and with all beyond, because it would produce a chaotic flux in you until you got used to it. The whole of the physical body is a limitation upon consciousness, specially precipitated so that individuals are given a point of reaction serially so that they can find themselves step by step. So the nervous energy in it is simply that much of the absolute that has managed to get through all the filters and appear as volitional action. And it's because of this fact that the fire signs in general are very, very strongly warned to be very, very careful, because they feel absolute. That is, they do not believe, when they examine themselves, that there is anything in principle impossible. And consequently, they have to be very, very careful, because they can do all sorts of funny things, to the detriment of other parts of their organism. Not that it matters ultimately, but it can impede them for the time being. See, each sign, each super sign, has a danger. The danger for fire signs is cheek. having a go at anything, even challenging the divinity to knock the ceiling down or something. And the danger for air signs is rationality, of thinking that to know it is enough. Similar to engrave it on the brain, say, well, I know the formula for that, and forget it because I know it. Knowledge is not enough. The danger for the water signs is sensuality, pleasure flux. And the danger for earth signs is melancholy. They can become very, very depressed. Now, each person should know his own danger and know that that danger constitutes for him, at some point in his being, his chief deficiency, his chief point, which he has to work on. And it is his best friend when it's worked on. For instance, we could say, as an absolute statement, that fire signs are better off than anybody, from the point of view of spirit. Because fire in the nervous system is spirit. So they're nearer to it. But because they're nearer to it, they're in danger. Because they get cheeky. If they can curb the cheek, then their good fortune can be capitalized upon. Now, in the case of the air signs, their rationality is their best friend and worst enemy. It's their best friend because they can be very clear. It's their worst enemy because they tend to be satisfied with being clear intellectually and not to do anything about it. And it can lead to coldness, lack of feeling and so on. In the feeling signs, the best friend is that they have compassion and openness, sympathy and so on. And the worst thing is that that compassion and openness and so on leads to a complete laxity in every sense, morally and so on. You know, in Christ said this woman had only one sin, she loved too much. It's a water sign reference. Because there's a tendency in them not to say no to that kind of pleasure flux relation. And with the earth signs, their best thing is stability. As I said before, a Virgo is a good person. But inside that goodness, inside that solidness, there's a mercurial spin causing the circulation of the blood and the other forces in the body, and an inner insecurity, the exact reflex of their external apparent stability. And therefore, they feel insecure inside, and they feel very often that their goodness is not appreciated or not rewarded like it should be. And then they become very, very depressed. And then they think that air signs are brilliant and fire signs get away with it and water signs have a less time and so on. All of it makes them depressed. The thing is to understand the temperamental bias and to recognize it as a particular bias caused by the accident of birth. And then deliberately to cultivate the opposite. On the zodiac, it tells you exactly how to do it. On the zodiac around here. We've got our water signs and our earth signs and air signs. Putting a lion in here and a virgin there. And a scorpion with a sting in his tail there. And a memory man and a fishy emotionalist. One burden bearer. And the rest of us. Now, the correct reply is always to play the opposite, whether in yourself or with anybody else. For instance, opposite to Gemini is Sagittarius. Now, a Gemini always has reasons for everything. It's under Mercury, spins around very rapidly, and produces reasons. Now, if this fellow deigns to argue on their level, there's no end to it. So his best thing is, in the presence of a reason, to shoot straight through the alternatives. The Turks have a very funny way of saying that. In the middle of an argument, they just go, you mean this primary dichotomy? One fellow is proving this, which only proves that. There's a line that cuts between, so all argument is futile. Because absolutely, that division is a falsity. So no amount of reasoning really means anything. Ultimately, it's an act of will, direction. So if somebody sets you up with the horns of a dilemma, you immediately say, that is form, not volition. And no matter how watertight it is, that means how cancer-proof it is, as I now happen to be a cloud, I'm going to sit straight between it. So no matter what the formal statement is, fundamentally you say, I'm sorry, that is only reason. The poet once said, reason has moons, but the moon is not hers, lying in on her seas, confounding her with summers, but over-delighting me. And it means that as the universe is ultimately power, and idea is only a termination of power, we can afford to ignore the terminations. So we shoot between all the arguments. Now, suppose we get the reverse of that situation. We get a fellow who keeps shooting very hard. And another man born in Germany. And this fellow has been educated a little about his own nature and the nature of this fellow, and this one has not been educated about it. This fellow tends to shoot. But simply because he is a shooter, he really shoots better at a target. So, if this fellow is very cunning and is under mercury and is therefore quite cunning by nature, he can be trained to set up pseudo targets for him to shoot between. In other words, he sets up a real object at the back and a couple of alternatives for him to shoot between so that he hits that target. Now, this is a question of individual level. If he knows himself better than he knows himself, he will be trapped. This is where the generalities no longer constitute importances. If he is better knowledge, if he has better knowledge of himself, he will beat him, in spite of the fact that he's a better man. Absolutely. You see? So if we take this opposition, the Libra is a perceptive kind and sees everything separately as forms, myriads of forms. The sign of the ram is a sign of undifferentiated energy appearing as general scatter, and it won't keep to the point. Libra replies every time it moves by showing it that whatever it has moved from and to, it always was a percept. So he can actually cause confusion in that by setting up targets quicker than he can get to them. I'm talking about warfare at the moment. If he wanted to help you, he could do something else. So if you find that nervous energy in yourself, tend to rush all over the place and say fiat, let there be something or another. Hitler was born just there, in between the Ram and Taurus positions. If he's trying to do that, then we set up everything for perceptual data for him to run at. And we insist, when we have this mood on ourselves, of reminding ourselves that wherever we go and whatever we see, it will necessarily be perceptual. It will never escape form, as long as we are aware of anything whatever. That is the reply to that. The reply of a Virgo to a Pisces, you see, is very difficult. This is a highly emotional sign. Feeling sound, the tendency to gush out and flood over the situation can be very sensitive. And this one is very, very solid externally. So if somebody tries to flood you with emotions, well, by the use of the zodiac in this way, you can reply to anything. A Leo is a man of will, and he wants only to do what he wants, because he must be free. The difference between that and that. Leo is just wanting to be free, but this one wants to shoot things. He doesn't want to shoot things, he just wants to be free. And the correct reply to him is to quote from his memory what happened the last 1,000 times he was free. You hit him with the memory all the time. The correct reply to a Cancer in the middle of a feeling flux of delightful sensuality is a sudden bang into gross material work. At 8 o'clock in the morning, you'll have to get up and scratch it. This kind of reply that goes on internally in yourself and in your relation with other people is a very great accelerator of the work. The more you can manipulate a symbol of that order quickly, the more quickly you become released from all the mechanical determinations. Because what you're really doing is setting up an internal process in your so-called astral body, and this process becomes permanent. You have to have a permanent gravity center, an idea to which all ideas will accrete. We have many such ideas in different nations. There's a purely Hebraic Kabbalistic system, there's an alchemical and astrological, a magical and so on system. Each one is coherent and perfectly complete in itself, and it doesn't matter which one you stick to because they're all talking about the same ultimate phenomena. But it is important to get to the level of being able to use one symbol coherently and consistently for a period of time. And the zodiac is as good as any other. Actually, the Enneagram thing of good is a Zoharic, Kabbalistic thing in its origin. And these things are so many thousands of years old, even in the recorded sense, and innumerable years orally transmitted. All these symbols have come down to us through originally a priestly line, a ruling line, priest kings, and have descended to us, and we can still produce the same results with the same symbols if we use them in the same way. So learn the zodiac in that way. Learn it in triads, you see, and in so doing, fix it in your mind. Never mind what the newspapers say is going to happen to you next Friday. It doesn't really matter because it's irrelevant to the purpose. Even if it were true, it would still be irrelevant. The purpose of this symbolic diagram is psychological integration. It is a method of reminding you that you have a nervous system. The nervous energy is, cardinal point, distributed throughout the body. Secondly, it is gathered together in particular centers. Thirdly, it is motivated in given directions. To remind you, it is spread throughout the whole body, it is gathered in particular centers, and it is motivated and directed. In the case of the perception, the air triad, you have perception from the sense organs, the storing of perceptions in the memory, and the actual comparing of such perceptions in Gemini. These things you must know about, and you must say to yourself, I am perceiving at the moment. I'm not remembering, I am perceiving. Now, in a pure percept, for the first time, you cannot recognize what you are seeing. Recognition is recognition. If you have seen it before, that is, if you recognize it, it is in the memory. So you are not seeing it purely. If you want a pure percept, an objective percept in the Gurdjieff sense, you must destroy individual memory. Every second, there's a principle called TWT, or TWT, or that is then. Whatever it was you were doing, scrub it out, and start again. And look at the thing. If I look at you with pure perception, I don't know what you are. I'm not the faintest idea. When I look at you now, I'm not the faintest idea what you are. Because I'm not referring to memory. When I refer to memory, your name comes in. And we exchange letters comes in. And I can remember you smiling in a certain way. I remember you have a motorbike and so on. All these things are from here, from the memory. And they start putting my eyes out to focus on the percept. In order to remember you, I have to obscure the percept. You see how important that is. So the memory imposes on us, so we do not see things as they are. I know a fellow, and he has a photograph of his wife taken 48 years ago. He looks at it and he looks at her. He says, it's a lovely picture of you, this. And really, he can't see his wife. Not a bad idea, but this memory covering is tremendously important because in fact it is the chief formal blocker for the pure percept you need to release yourself. Because all association of idea has correlated with it associated feelings, attachments in Scorpio, and emotional reactions. You know, your wife can get more emotional reaction out of you with one word than all the other women in the world could do with a million. she can say something. Needles. Because there's a lot of other things piled up into the memory. So you see the terrific weight that's in the memory into the emotional life that can get at you. And all these things have to be broken in order to make this immortal diamond body. So we get the percept in its pure form, the recording of it in the memory, and then the association of all similar percepts. Even if they have only one point of similarity, they will associate. That point of similarity is a do for another octave in Gurdjieff's sense. These things are compared, that is, their similarity is duly noted down, and divided where they do not have similarities. And the whole thing referred back to the perceptual world, and I'm furious, which is Maya, illusion. In the feeling, you have a general flux, which tends, if you let it manifest itself, lie down in a perfectly relaxed state, you will find that the actual movement through the body of the blood in certain parts pleases. If you rock the baby, you know, the flux of fluids in the body gives it pleasure and it will become quiet. When the mother was carrying the baby, her pelvic movement swirled it about in the amniotic fluid. It was like in a very pleasant boat without crowds. This process of pleasure flux is there, and when it is gathered together by a stimulus of a certain order, it passes into Scorpio. It becomes a specific feeling reaction, either of attachment or repulsion, so that you then find out if you have a general pleasure plus a formal stimulus, the appearance of devotion, that is, you attach yourself to a thing and start serving it. If you're not careful, you become identified with it and think it's part of your well-being, and then you really start devoting yourself to it. When this happens, this devotion, if the devoted object, if the object of devotion is attacked, it flies immediately into an emotional display. It flies out an emotional reaction, and the whole thing embalms itself in a vicious circle. When we come into the physical body, we find the physical body absorbs, it takes in food from outside. And that food, which is in general spread out throughout the body, is put in specific places, the glands, the internal secretion in the body. And there, it undergoes certain changes of phase, certain frequency changes, and is then passed into the blood and circulated, and that again predisposes you to assimilate. Remember, assimilate means take similars in. It predisposes you to get some more of that stuff, so that every time you put a little bit of something into your physical body, some food, it changes the chemistry of the body, so the internal organs of secretion, circulates them, alters the being of the body, and you know, being is another way of knowing, determines knowledge level and so on. It alters the being of your body and causes it to tend to assimilate more of those substances. So if you take the grain of mustard seed as an example, it happens that symbolizes a good. If you take in that little article of diet which is good for you, suppose you decide in spite of everything you're going to suck an orange or something, and you actually do so, then a little message goes in and certain changes occur, higher frequencies, macrocosmic, break in, simply because an orange is a recipient of very high frequencies. Then it sends a message down here, it circulates through the body, and it predisposes you to have another. Now, if you've been fed in a wrong way since childhood, and you've got yourself chemically built in such a way that the right things tend to be rejected, at first those right foods would be unpleasant to you, might even disturb you. But if you persist in doing it, knowing it to be right, you will create a stage of conflict in you, and then persisting through the comfort, you will change the constitution of the body and refine it so that then it can respond to a different feeling level. This is how you change the actual constitution of the body as a receiver of different vibrations. So you see on this symbol, there's quite a lot of thought involved in the generation of it. There weren't fools who set up that circle and put four triangles into it and allotted various significances. And they didn't just use it for saying rubbishy things. They used it to meditate upon, to study their own nature and their own reactions. The Chinese use an eight-pointed system for a certain other kind of psychological trick. This one is Babylonian thing in origin, as it's come down to us. But prior to that, it comes out of the primary effect of the division of the circle into six parts by the compass. And those six are two threes. And that three is the basis of that energy man. Remember that when we're talking about the transition from one level to another, we're talking about something that repeats. The Eleusis, he who must come again, the Doe or Deer or God, which plays himself round and restates himself at different levels. And the top frequency is the top Doe, and the progression in the creative process is downwards towards coarser and coarser along the wave notes, greater depth. And when we come down to the ultimate, the universal substance cannot respond to the stimulus at a different level, and that is the lowest frequency there is in the universe, which would represent by the moon, by a dead mineral body. And at the other end, you have the Aleph vibrations, which are the top level vibrations of the absolute. All of these are reflected inside this diagram. All of them have their correspondence inside the human organism. If you work on one particular only, too long, you will unbalance yourself. That's very, very important to realize. When you identify with a thing, you open a door to that thing. If you identify with the sign of the ram, there's a ritual we use for doing this sort of thing. We can actually induce in any person here, who wish to undergo it, in the state of pure Ram. And that person would then feel that all the energy in the absolute belonged to him, and he would command and would have to be obeyed or else. And if we allow him to stay in that state, he would suddenly start dictating to us the next experiment and require us to obey. Now, if you stayed in it too long, it would require a terrific amount of work to get him out of it, because he'd love the feeling of it. The process of ritual initiations actually takes a man around the whole of these 12 positions in the initiations called the Labours of Hercules, or the Gilgamesh of the Babylonian cycle. It is actually 12 initiation points, and with appropriate rituals, these things can be induced, and the person then knows every aspect of his own being in isolation, and he knows its virtues and its horrible vices. Then he conceives from himself the necessity of having all rather than just each. All is better than each. It includes each plus the integration pattern. So the diamond body involves that we know, at least in the Swedish aspect, these 12 facts about ourselves. And think how difficult it is. We have to know of our nervous system energy that is diffused throughout the body, which is tending to give orders throughout the body all the time. So that wherever there is a nerve in the body, there is an order tending to be given. And we have to know that every center, every cell, is a little individual Leo on its own account. That's a summit. That's a tiny little being whenever there is a cell, whenever there's a partition between one part of the body and another, there is a little lion shouting out, "I want to be free." Each organ will shout for freedom and self-determination. And there is an impulse, a pattern of purpose running through the whole body. Now that's only one triangle. And you have to be able to watch that triangle and know that over your whole body there are impulses, that those things are separate little entities, the general field images, separate entities, the particularized purposes, and you have to be able to know all these things as impulses at once. That's quite a job. Then you have to apply this to the remaining three triads and then do the whole thing at once. Now, it's not a day's work. But funnily enough, it can be shortened. It can be shortened by the proper use of that process we had in the beginning. Start with your general feeling and then do your best to define the formal content. And then look at the gross material bodies to see if they actually had the gross material in them, like a Stradivarius made of dough. And if they haven't, you just don't try to use it for that purpose. And this way you create a discrimination organ. And then gradually comes into you the equilibration of those three facts which allows the statement of the volitional center in you. Remember, volition is impossible until you've actually become aware of those three aspects simultaneously.
The becoming aware would be the value of the memory, wouldn't it, as opposed to the memory shielding the pure percept. The memory in this case would be, this would be the other aspect of it, the value.
Yes. Whereas mechanical memory is your worst enemy. Deliberately referred to memory with objectively stacked content is your best friend. But you see, you want to see in the memory not a remembered sense datum. You want to see the universal that that physical object represents. To see it as an eternal thing, rather than as simply a stimulus situation in the five-sense world. In that sense, you're looking at platonic ideas. And if we make a mark like that, when I make a mark like that, I do not think for a moment, usually, I will do now deliberately, that I have made a mark with chalk upon that paper, and that mark is made of three lines. It isn't made of three lines, is it? It's made of one line that goes to the limit and then bends and goes in another direction. And I call it a triangle made of veiled chalk or something. Now, that is not a platonic idea. That's a mark on the paper. And that's useless. But if I say that triangle represents the resolution of a primary duality, and there's my primary duality with no link factor, and that's men and that's women and that's power and that's matter, and that's laughing and that's crying and so on, and all pairs of opposites unresolved are now symbolized, and I've just put a little stabilizer in between them, and then I draw the bisections between these things. I'm beginning to stabilize the concept of positive and negative and the resolution factor in between. Between pleasure and pain, there is field flux, the unifying factor. So I must place that feeling on there, pleasure there and pain there. And then the triad becomes a very, very useful mode of diagnosing a situation. But then we're talking about really a platonic idea, not about a mark on the paper. And when we stack our memory with these ideas, these cosmic ideas, instead of with sense data that were relative and particular, then our memory is very, very useful. Because we don't really care two hoots if we have an Aunt Florence. It doesn't really matter at all. But if we have the principle of anti-something, namely against your mother, because your mother might have been, she didn't, and Florence, but the general idea of flowers and blossomings and so on, then we're constructing something useful. Something useful always and everywhere. And the thing is to elevate every particular in that manner into a universal symbol, and then apply the symbol into our own economy in order to control our own reactions on the four levels. On the nervous energy level, on the feeling level, on the formal idea definitional level, and on the gross material actual level.
And you say that this is continually being repeated. Oh, I was going to ask you about repetition and the statement of Kierkegaard's in relation to this, where he appears to place tremendous value on what he calls repetition. I'll ask you next week about it, but...
Well, shortly, about repetition, we can change it to the idea of the eternal recurrence.
Yes, I thought that was sort of what you... question of interpretation.
This diagram, which is simply a circle with some triangles placed in it, if we remember the original diagram we did of space with impulses of energy in it, and we know that the very, very concept of space is a construct from a centre, namely in my case this centre.
Mm.
I just go from my centre of reference out in all directions equally, and I construct a sphere. Now, wherever there are centres of observation, they are always and necessarily the centres of spheres. So, that diagram represents a fact of eternal recurrence. That wherever and whatever, under whatever conditions, there are centres of observation that are necessarily spheres of observation, extending in all directions around those observation centres. So that it doesn't matter in what world we find ourselves precipitated, if we first remind ourselves of the fact of eternal recurrence being cyclic, and that a circle spun on its axis makes a sphere, we can analyze any situation whatever with that diagram. It is then an eternal diagram. Something, it doesn't matter what world we get precipitated into, if we get thrown into the bardo or
Results from having to look for what he considers to be something new, in which he considers to be little value, really. If we are continually hoping and looking for something
other than that
which we already have, we can't accept or understand.
Well, you see, people prefer one shape of hen to another shape of hen.
Yes.
And they don't know why all hens are just hens. One has a nose that goes like that, and somebody doesn't like it. Well, that is a matter of type reaction. It doesn't mean anything. It's particular, it's relative to the sense data, and it's quite meaningless. Absolutely. The question is it one of those?
Mm.
Is it an intelligence? Has it got all these processes in it? If so, then it has relational possibilities which can be developed. Mm. It is our duty to develop them in us first.
Is it good for the earth signs generally that we take those and the water signs medicine?
That's only encouraging themselves in their own condition.
Yes. So it would be better if they tried to balance with the other factors.
Yes. Yes.
I see.
As far as earth signs are concerned, the best thing they can do is never allow themselves to be elevated. See, their lives are cyclic. And every depression that an earth sign gets into has been preceded with a state of elevation and well-being. If I draw a median line and put a wave going over it like a sine wave, if there has been a depression, it has been preceded by an elation. This is a necessary law. Now, to avoid a depression, all you have to do is pull down the energy of the elation. Try and pull it down. Don't allow yourself to be elated, because the subsequent wave cannot go deeper than the preceding one was high.
Mm.
That's the cure of it. Mm. And then they come on a perfectly even keel, a perfect balance, and they're never depressed again. The trouble is with this elation thing is they always feel good in it, but it's a pure illusion. It's a product of a chemical stimulus deriving from anti-depression.
Mm.
So when they're elated, that's the only time they can do anything. They can't do anything when they're depressed. They're passive. When they're elated, they should pull themselves down. And then they feel a sense of power because they have pulled themselves down. And then they can never go lower under the median line than the elation was above it. And so they stabilize themselves. That's the proper way for the earth sign to deal with it.
Mm.
And it's a very quick way if they do it.
Yes.